there's a news story so important that it blows away everything else you're going to talk about today. And then sometimes there's a news story so important and so meaningful to what you do that you decide, no, you're going to do the original story that you were going to do in the beginning anyway, because otherwise you're just going to be down all day. Kirby DeLauder, a councilman for Frederick, Maryland, threatened to sue a local newspaper for printing the name Kirby DeLauder without Kirby DeLauder's permission. The newspaper responded with an editorial entitled Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder, mentioning Kirby DeLauder's name over 30 times, as well as a number of mangled versions of Kirby DeLauder's name, such as Sherbert DeLuder, and Kirby DeLauder anagrams like Keyed Rural Bit. Kirby DeLauder has since made a statement apologizing for threatening the lawsuit. That's the name of the episode today. It's Kirby DeLauder, or the terrorists have won. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Olvey, 844 Skeptic. That's 844-753-7842. Joining me this week is Rebecca Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
And Dave Brulette, how are you?
It's been a week, hasn't it?
It has been a week. And, you know, somebody may ask why I before what obviously happened, I wanted to do a news story that didn't have anything to do with atheism specifically, but it does have something to do with journalism. And we are occasionally journalists. we pretend to be. We're pretend journalists. Well, we cosplay as journalists every now and again.
Well, more importantly, this has to do with government, but not with the separation of church and state.
How could I talk about the horrible things that government does to the First Amendment if I could be sued for mentioning, Jim McCune?
Well, and we're also talking about the separate from this guy's mind from reality when he thinks that he can actually sue for this.
You were saying he's kind of pulled a Tommy Wiseau and saying it was a comedic thing now?
Yeah, I did see that he has issued not quite a retraction. He did issue an apology.
Right.
But he also said, I was just joking about this whole thing. I'm kind of reminded of Fred Armisen's, I'm just kidding. Or Tommy Wiseau, no, actually The Room was meant to be a satirical piece of art.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it, Kirby DeLauder.
So that's why we did it. And, but we can't not talk about what's going on this week. A series of terrorist attacks rocked Paris, France this week. First, three gunmen attacked the offices of a satirical magazine, Charlie Hebdo, in Paris on Wednesday, killing 12 and injuring 11 more. Two of the suspects were unaccounted for until Friday, when they took hostages at a printing plant. Another hostage situation at a kosher market unfolded in another town near the capital, which left four people dead. Three of the hostage takers were killed in simultaneous coordinated raids by French police. Another assailant associated with the market attack is rumored to have fled to Syria. All attackers are said to have ties to Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Now, for a while, I'll be honest with you, I've had sort of doubts that I could keep doing Ask an Atheist as a show. I was beginning to feel like I was losing sight of what I was supposed to be doing, and maybe it wasn't as necessary as it was in 2010 or whatever. No, gonna continue. Because in the last 4 weeks, I have seen unfold live on television three shootouts between religious extremists and cops. One in Australia, two in France. I saw them unfold live on television. And in two of those cases, innocent people were killed. And I didn't go seeking it out. I admit I'm a news hound. I admit that I like watching the news. I like being informed of the world around me. And I have, you know, video news on, or sometimes, or often radio news on in the background as I work, because I am a news hound. It's part of why I can do a show like Ask an Atheist. So, and I'm often awake late at night, working on servers or writing code for the show or doing production or whatever. So it just happened that in 4 weeks, I watched people die on television twice. I saw three shootouts happen live. I'm still processing that. I don't know what that is. And then that's just what's happening on the media. There's stuff we're not seeing on the media, too. The man in Saudi Arabia who's getting 50 lashes a week for saying mean things about the prophet, where they're doing it in public places. And we're now getting video of people crowding around watching this guy as if they were watching, I don't know, a boxing match or a circus. And then you have Boko Haram, which basically killed a town this week.
there's a town in Africa that does no longer exists.
Yeah.
Anymore. It's yeah.
And then you remove, and then you pull back, you zoom out, and just in the last year, you have the stuff that happened in Ottawa. Go back a little farther, you have the Boston Marathon bombings. Go back, you have Boko Haram. You have stuff happening in Syria. You have ISIS. There's a lot of people out there, and I'm among them, who say that religious extremists are a separate problem, or are separate from people who are not religious extremists. The people who we say on the show all the time are better than their religion. But that's a hard thing to see today. It's a very hard thing for me to see. I want to live in a world where the actions of extremists don't prevent other people who are not extremists, who don't murder people for drawing cartoons, from doing things. That's the world I want to live in. I think that's the world most of us want to live in. But it's not like extremists are going to listen to us. Is there a way for religious people to accept responsibility in solving the problem without accepting blame? Is there a path for them to say, we are going to fix it, but we are not the cause? And is there a way for those of us who think differently than they do to help those people? I don't know. Another question that's passing through my mind right now is, where is the line? When are we able to think of this as an existential problem? When this happens once a day? Once a week? Once a month? When are we as a society going to say religious extremism is an existential problem to civilization? If it's not now, show me the line. Draw me a box. Tell me where. I'm confused and frankly frightened. not personally. I live in the Pacific Northwest. I live in the Middle Earth of the United States. It's different here. You cross the Cascades, and it's a magical land of fairies and elves and politics that occasionally make sense. I'm not in personal danger, but I fear for our ability to get along. I fear for our society, and I fear for the people who are going to be the victims of dim-witted morons who believe the answer to these problems is yet another religious crusade or more of the same. This is not how I expected this segment to go. I kind of wanted you guys to talk more, but it bothers me. It bothers me. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the weird stuff that's happening outside of extreme Islam. The NAACP bombings in Colorado, which were fairly recent. Is the tone changing, or has it always been like this? What do you guys think?
I think in some respects, the tone is changing because of the voices surrounding it. I think that in some respects, it has been like this. For someone that does read and follow, for instance, Boko Haram in Nigeria, you know, it first caught my attention last year when individuals had kidnapped, you know, 200 some girls who were taking an end of year science exam. Looking at that, having a Google News alert, you know, email you when something about Boko Haram comes up.
Yeah.
It is every day. It is every week. It is once a month. It's, I mean, looking at ISIS killing a variety of sects of Muslims that are not of the flavor of Islam that they demand people should be. I'm not sure that it's new in terms of the activity around the world that's anchored in religious extremism.
Yeah.
I do think that it was a big shock for at least Europe and the United States seeing something so public and so scattered across a major Western capital.
Yeah, it's difficult to understand and wrap your head around so many so horrifying events, but it screams to me. I saw something online the other day where someone pointed out, it doesn't matter who you are or what you believe, there are people in the world who think you deserve to die for it.
Right.
And it doesn't matter which religion you are. And there are people who share your belief who think others need to die for theirs.
And this is where the atheism thing comes in strong for me, is I'm told day in and day out, practically every day of my life since I started this show, that religions have the superior morality. That without religion, I don't have morality and I'm not capable of being a moral person. I hear this every day. I either read it on the internet or I'm told it at a bar or some religious person finds out who I am and gets into a conversation with me. It's every day. But why is it this superior morality has the bigger problem with killing people? I don't get it. I don't. And then they go, oh, USSR. Oh, they were atheists too. Yeah, their problem wasn't their problem there wasn't their religion or lack thereof. It was their dogma.
They were not overcome with rationalism in the USSR.
Yeah, because when you add rationalism and when you actually think about trying to make life better for people, no matter who they are, things become easier. I have had less moral conundrums in my life since I decided that maybe the best way to address getting along with people is using my rationality. And rationally, it's pretty easy to figure out that people don't deserve to die for drawing cartoons. People don't deserve to die for wanting equal rights. People don't deserve to die for having opinions. People don't deserve to die for having the wrong skin color. You could name anything and people don't deserve to die for X.
And I think it's important to realize, like, there is a sort of movement, sort of backlash to these when, you know, there are those who want to blame Islam alone for the terrible things that happen in the world, which isn't exactly the right way to go about it. There are also those who want to separate entirely the extremism from the religion itself and say, you know, yeah, those are crazies, but they don't count. And let's no true Scotsman them from the rest of Islam. But the fact is, when you look at like the moderate Muslims out there who are decrying this as a tragedy, they are also saying that they deserve or that, you know, maybe you should not be able to blaspheme. These people shouldn't have died for it. Maybe just go to jail for it. They're still trying. They still believe that you have to limit people's right to criticize religion. That's unacceptable.
Right. Frankly, criticizing religion is how you're able to hear me right now.
Right.
Because we are living in an age that stand on the shoulders of people who invented things like trigonometry in Spain. At some point, somebody had to say, hey, the way the world works isn't exactly what it says in the book. And science was the result, which is how you're able to hear me right now. Questioning religion got us where we are. Questioning religion has saved religion and has saved religious people. We need it. We need to be able to question everything.
I think one of the most potent lessons that I can keep remembering is that the right to be able to criticize and express one's opinion ensures that a religious believer will be able to continue their religious practice.
Yeah. And I'll even go you one further. Satire is necessary.
Absolutely.
Satire has been so important in history of making things clear where they're not. Ask any comedian. It's important. Even pictures of a puffin with a beard and a turban, even pictures of a French cartoonist making out with Muhammad. Sometimes you need that to say, hey, maybe hate less. Hey, maybe there's something here you're missing. And I have always said that atheists are people, and which means atheists are as good as people. And that's been the whole point of Ask an Atheist, is to show you what atheism looks like, warts and all. Sometimes I say stupid things. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we put our work behind something that's ultimately destructive. We're human beings, just like you. And I'm certain one of these days, some idiot is going to commit some violence on somebody. If it hasn't happened already, I mean, there's some question on that. In the name of atheism. And when that day happens, I'm going to own it. I will come on the air. I will turn on my microphone and I will say, that guy's an atheist, and he's a jerk, and he killed people, and that's wrong. Time for you to do the same. They're reading the same book you are. They're as different. If you're a Christian, it's the difference between Baptists and Catholics. If you're a Muslim, Sunni, Shia, whatever, it's time to stop playing no true Scotsman games. If this is an existential problem, we need to stop. Othering them only goes so far. You need to own it if you're going to fix it, if you want to fix it.
And
I think a lot of people do.
I think so. And I think it's important to understand where there's a difference between saying your religion is responsible for something and you are responsible for something. So if you are Muslim, I'm not saying you are equivalent to somebody who brings a gun into a magazine and attacks and kills people. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that what you believe gave them the foundation to think that's an acceptable act.
I think it's a really hard thing, Sam, what you say, to wrap your mind around the responsibility without the blame. It's something I struggle with in general as a concept. It seems really weird to me. But here's the thing. Responsibility is incredibly empowering. Like you said, atheists on the radio can't try and convince or help Muslim extremists. But someone from one's own culture or religion, one's own family has tremendously more power to do that.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's what we should be thinking about as atheists, is if people choose to do that, how do we help and not harm those people? Because I do think this is an existential problem. History has a lot of religious uprising and a lot of death and a lot of wars and death of culture, death of language, death of stories caused by religious people saying, hey, we think we deserve to rule the world, and groups of other religious people saying, hey, no, you don't. I mean, that's, oh, I don't know, 80% of history at this point.
Sam, a common refrain you use is on the show is people are better than their book. You know, religious believers are better than what their book prescribes. And I recently heard Valerie Tirico, a writer in the Northwest and someone who's been on the show before, talking about how people who are religious believers who do not do these atrocious acts, it's because their humanity trumps their religion. And as humanists, as atheists, if we can recognize that humanity, the humanity in religious believers who are better than that, to use and call upon our shared humanity to, like you said, support people who are taking the responsibility to help put an end to religious extremism, I think that could be one of the most valuable things that atheists could do in this context.
I agree. And I'm going to go a step further and say maybe it's time to look at that book. Maybe it's time to say God was wrong. I don't know. I'd like to be able to say that. I don't think I'd be listened to. But there are words in these holy books that empower these people to murder people. Maybe it's time to see the holy book as flawed, as it has been done by many religions many times in the past. Don't ask me to do it. You're not going to like the results.
If you look at this and see that, yes, these people are better than their religions, their humanity, as you were saying, Becky, is better than their book, then perhaps their humanity without the book would make them even better. But how do you convince them of that?
I don't want to. I would rather. I think it's better if they make that decision on their own. I don't know. This has never been about converting people. It's been about showing people that we deserve to live. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back. I'm probably going to have to talk about more bad things.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With stdhometestkit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with stdhometestkit.com.
Da-da-da-da.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. There's been a narrative in on the show lately that I really feel like I need to talk about right now. One is the increasing encroachment of humanism in my discussions on the show and how that interfaces with how I talk about politics. The first of that is just something I saw several times on the internet from fellow atheists that really, I just want this out there to put it into perspective. I saw an image on social media three times of people are talking about Muslims and being bad, yet nobody is talking about what's happening with the NAACP bombing. The thing that got me about that image macro is it showed up on my Facebook wall as I was watching police storm a factory and a deli in Paris. Like, people are actually dying right now, and you're wondering why people are paying attention to this. Maybe stop being so sarcastic. maybe stop pretending that you have some sort of special knowledge. I watch a lot of news. I'm very familiar with the flaws of the 24-hour news cycle. I don't like it as much as you are, even though I guess I'm kind of a part of it now. But be a little smarter.
Yeah, I remember this coming up when the Ice Bucket Challenge was sort of taking over the internet, and there was a backlash of, why are you not paying attention to this story? Why are you not paying attention to that? And I'm like, okay, this is a thing that raised 9 figures for research into a disease, and you're going to complain about it as if everyone who follows the Ice Bucket Challenge or did the Ice Bucket Challenge only did that for a month.
Right.
Did not pay attention to anything else. Like, you think we are not capable of being aware that there is more than one thing going on in the world at a time.
There are 7 billion of us.
Yes.
We can do more than one thing at a time.
Yes.
We can. We easily can. We can actually go into space and solve poverty. We live in a world where we can do more than one thing at a time. And for me, I kept getting those. And my answer to that now is, why are you on social media? Where is your hair shirt? I mean, if really we're only supposed to be focusing on these things, hanging out on social media, looking at pictures of cats might not be the thing for you.
Yeah.
From an educator perspective, sometimes you see one shocking news event and someone isn't knowledgeable about lots of things that are going on in the world. There's one thing to hook a 16-year-old into following world issues, to getting passionate about something, to learn more about something.
Right.
I'm going to take that as a win.
That's the kind of thing that I see atheists doing a lot. And that it's mostly a liberal thing, but there's a lot of liberal atheists out there. And that just frosted my nether regions, and I just couldn't leave that one alone. And it goes back to what I said before. When does this become an existential problem? If not now, tell me when. And you know what? I'll believe you. I'm okay with being flexible on this. I'm not all knowledgeable. There's a lot I could learn about a lot of things, and maybe this is one of them. The other thing specifically has to do with humanism, and it's the case of the United States and its role in this, and its role in maybe doing something about this, and maybe having to do something about this on a military basis, and our moral stance as we do it. I'm a humanist. I believe in the Humanist Manifesto. I want to be able to say on my own show that torture is bad. And I've been backing off on that because that's a debate that may not have to do with atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. But today, in January of 2015, it does now. It did then too, but I can't ignore it any longer. And that's what I'm going to do. And if you're one of those people whose patriotism believes that the United States can do no wrong, maybe it's time for you to move on. Because I'm going to roll with it. Torture is bad. The fact that we're torturing people is really going to undermine our ability to do something about this in a constructive way. And it is torture. Just ask Christopher Hitchens. Well, you can't now. He's dead. But he used to say that waterboarding wasn't torture. And then he underwent it and he changed his tune. And what he said is that if that's not torture, then nothing is torture. He was empirical about it. He went and did it, and it really changed his mind. It's time that we speak of this honestly and openly, that things are what they are. And I believe in, I am a humanist. My humanism is my statement of my belief. And my statement of belief says that this is torture and torture is bad. And that's not something I'm going to shy away from anymore. And this is just the first of a few, I think. What do you guys... I can't imagine, Becky, you'd have a problem with this, given that we're both humanists.
I've been with you as well. I've been listening to this behind the scenes as well. And it's something that is difficult to look at in terms of what position does atheism say? You know, what position does atheism hold on this? None. Because atheism is merely lacking a belief in a god. But so many atheists are informed by secular humanism. And it is the thing that motivates someone to have an informed belief that one thing is good, one thing is bad. And I think that it's in complete accord with a humanist philosophy that is held by many atheists.
Yeah, it's... When you bring up the torture conversation, I mean, I don't understand how any ethical person could not look at torture and understand that there is no good justification. And on top of the fact that there's no good justification, it's ineffective. It's not a good tool to use. Anybody who's used it will tell you that you get bad information through torture. It's not...
I wish that were true. Just ask the CIA.
No, they got bad information. They got that's what this whole thing is about.
I agree with you, mm-hmm. but the opinions on that coming out of the CIA have been bifurcated, to say the least. But that's part of the reason we've tended to shy away from stories like this, is atheism doesn't explicitly say anything about this stuff. Atheism is not humanism, and I right. strongly believe that, and I still want to represent that on the show. Only to a certain extent. But at some time, there has to be a time where I can say, this is my show, and I don't think I can do this show without having this opinion out in public anymore. And I guess I've got an echo chamber here. If you disagree with me, I want to hear from you. I do.
Explain to us why we should avoid this topic, if
right.
you think we should.
Or explain to me why I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm open to listening. I'm going to tell you, it's going to be really difficult. You're going to have a hard time convincing me, but my ears are open.
Speaking of listening, you can even call us and leave it on our voicemail. I mean, you can, you know, record as much as you want. You can call us live, whatever you want. If you want to disagree with us.
844-SKEPTIC, you know, 844-753-7842. That's our number. I do want to hear from you. What I don't want to become and to sort of put a boundary condition around this, which is something that I feel is really important. I don't want to become yet another political pundit. We've got enough of those. I don't want to be a blowhard. I want to be a completely different kind of blowhard. You know, and I think that's important. So this isn't gonna slowly transform into, you know, Rush Limbaugh or Rachel Maddow or something like that. It's still going to be Ask an Atheist, but there just comes a time where I feel like some of my opinions that I've been keeping away from Ask an Atheist can't really be kept away any longer, because it makes it very difficult for me to have an honest discussion about what I actually believe.
And if we're going to talk about rationalism on this show, you can't avoid topics like the fact that the government liaison to NASA now is who?
Oh, Ted Cruz. Yeah.
Ted Cruz. Yeah. Like, this is, you know, does that touch on atheism? No. Is that worth talking about? Yes.
Well, it kind of does if you look at the GOP national platform, which has kind of an anti-education, anti-science thing on it. The other side of that, though, is that there's a lot of people in the GOP who think that's junk.
Yeah.
And we would be incredibly remiss, and we would be ignorant of the facts of the matter if we didn't pay attention to that. So I'm not ready to throw the GOP out with the bathwater in that case, but Ted Cruz is kind of on the record saying a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah.
That I may interact with the show. So I don't know. What do you guys?
I'm with you, Sam.
It's a change, and I'm not entirely comfortable with it. I mean, honestly, just saying that's not a part of the show makes it kind of easy in some case. I want to talk about something else. New legislation was recently signed in Russia that would restrict the ability of sexual minorities to get driver's licenses. The legislation, which was signed by Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, would prevent licenses for people who are identified as having gender identity disorders, disorders of sexual preference, and psychological or behavioral disorders associated with sexual development and orientation. The order bans amputees and people shorter than 4'11" from driving. The government claims the purpose of the legislation is to cut traffic accidents.
So short people, you can't have a block extension of wood or anything. Hey, if you have an amputation, maybe you can't have adjusted, you know, controls or anything like that. Oh yeah, and also if you're gay, we don't want you driving because you're high accident risk.
It's strange because they're all equally absurd objections. It's
yeah.
Like, it's almost as if they wanted to bury the fact that they're throwing gays under the bus by throwing a couple other people under the bus with them. Like,
wow. I'll be honest with you. I had a really nerdy psychology joke when I first saw this. It's like, wow, are they still using the DSM-3? Do we just got to ship them new ones? I mean, dude, it's not in the book anymore. We got rid of that. We were wrong. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the DSM-3 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, I think is what it is. It's a documentation of psychological disorders and diseases, which listed homosexuality as a disease up until the DSM-4, which I believe was published
75,
something like that. Yeah.
And now we're on DSM-5, if I'm
I think we're still on 4TR, but 5 is imminent.
Okay.
Once upon a time, I used to know quite a bit about psychology.
So here's the thing. You have all of these restrictions. Is there any rational reason to ban someone who cross-dresses, you know, who uses gender non-conforming dress? Is there any reason to ban them from driving? Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It's one of the things that we see with the rise and prominence of the Greek Orthodox Church in Russia.
Russian Orthodox Church.
Excuse me. Yes, of course. Russian Orthodox Church.
Sorry.
That would be silly.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if Putin is really revanchist or not, but they're definitely hand in hand with the Russian Orthodox Church now, and the Russian Orthodox Church is calling the shots when it comes to stuff like this, just as religions always do when they're given, you know, a piece of the political pie. Going back, unfortunately, to Charlie Hebdo, but this is the tiniest sliver of light that I could find that you mentioned, that it looks like Ireland is looking on at getting rid of their blasphemy laws.
Yes, it looks like right now. This comes from Atheist Ireland, an article shared by Atheist Ireland on social media, that it looks like it will come to a popular referendum of whether to remove their blasphemy laws from their constitution. It is something that has been debated back and forth. The reason the blasphemy laws were put in, we talked to Mick Nugent about 2 years ago about this,
yeah.
Was because of the Catholic Church, and we're, you know, people are saying we want to be done with this. You need to be able to have critical conversations and expressions of beliefs free from the criminalization of those expressions.
Right.
And I think that this puts, this event in Paris puts this blasphemy law or blasphemy laws around the world in sharp focus.
Apropos of nothing, is RT reporting on this? Oh, I'm letting my opinions come out today. I'm having a case of the opinions.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, and the, one of the other stories I heard out of Ireland that really drove me crazy is there is a Islamic professor who is speaking about how, you know, of course we condemn the terrorist attacks on Charlie Hebdo, but on the other hand, satire needs to be limited so it doesn't offend people.
You're the bad guy.
Yeah, you're the bad guy. Well, and the funny thing is, like, somebody pointed out that this guy teaches at the college that graduated Jonathan Swift, Oscar Wilde, and Samuel Beckett.
Way to pay attention! This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about something completely different. We're going to talk with David Williamson of the Central Florida Freethought Community. And we're going to talk about the marriage equality stuff that is happening there, some of the problems, some of the solutions, and how things are improving.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Maggie used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer. And now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
Clerks in 14 Florida counties have stopped performing all wedding ceremonies, many to avoid officiating same-sex weddings. Florida courts were ordered by a federal judge to grant marriage licenses to same-sex couples starting January 1st. Ronnie Fussell, clerk of Duval County, said that he believes same-sex couples should be forbidden from marrying and that performing weddings for them would go against his religious principles. Joining us to talk about it today is David Williamson, founder of the Central Florida Freethought Community. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thanks, man. Glad to be here. Always a pleasure.
Great. So what is it, you know, we hear these news stories and stuff like this. What's it looking like on the ground right now?
Well, you know, I think we've cleared the hurdle and, you know, we've won the race. Apparently, as someone who's not directly involved in advocacy on this specific issue, you know, we're tangentially involved because this is, you know, one of the most important state church separation issues we're facing due to the significant and direct impacts on individuals and families. But fortunately, the majority of Americans and Floridians now, religious and non-religious, do stand in support of liberty and justice for all. So, you know, I think we're really there. Families have applied for marriage licenses, weddings have started. So I think, you know, we're joining the rest of civilized society in the world in recognizing that same-sex couples do have this right.
Hey, that's great to hear. When news came out that the same-sex couples would be able to wed, what was the general response in the community, in the greater community?
You know, as with most issues, it seems way more polarized than it actually is. I think you guys talk about this and you realize it, and we're part of that polarization in some ways, necessarily, I think, as far as balance goes. The loudest voices on any issue, including this state church issue, are on one side or another, making it seem like there's a bigger division than there really is. I mean, my typical crowd is free thinkers and socially liberal people, so I'm pretty much clear of any dissent on the issue other than in the media. But, you know, it's mixed, and I think we saw that we're a very red state in some ways. The metropolitan areas even reflected some of that. Some of the counties where there are big cities and larger LGBT communities, you know, the clerks weren't as favorable. In other areas, they very much were. Orlando has been very firm in support of LGBT rights and set up a registry just last year. And the mayor of Orlando, Buddy Dyer, conducted a ceremony, a group ceremony on Tuesday morning, which was, you know, it's fantastic to see that kind of support.
It really is fantastic to see that support. You know, some counties cited budgetary reasons for eliminating courthouse weddings. Do you think that's an actual legitimate concern in, say, the Northern Panhandle, where some people claim that it's more economically depressed than other counties?
You know, I honestly don't know, but it seems an odd time to do that. I know that Equality Florida, one of the few organizations that have keyed in on this issue in the state, have actually recently sought people that had been involved in that, so that in those areas, so they could actually perhaps bring a litigation against those counties. I don't know how that's going. I don't know where that stands right now. And I looked for the post a little while ago to see if it was still there. They may have removed that and found the folks they needed. Hopefully they'll pursue that, because it does seem quite unfair. But, you know, if they're going to, if the state laws as they stand now are going to limit the ability to wed couples to the clergy, to notaries, and to officers of the court, which is the way the laws read right now, it seems to me that the clerk or judges should be doing this for everyone. I mean, so many couples have been disenfranchised by their church over this issue, you know, for decades, and I'm sure much longer than that. So there's an opportunity here for him and his celebrant to do some good and put a sideline or full-time business together.
So there was a clerk in Okaloosa County wrote in a memo, I do not want to have members of our team put in a situation that prevents conflict between their personal religious beliefs and the implementation of contentious societal philosophy change. Were there any responses on local government level that were positive towards this change?
Well, you know, yeah, I do have one. But on that note, one clerk even polled the employees in the office to see if they would object, which struck a lot of journalists, or the journalist that wrote the article, and some of the friends I talked to, as extremely odd. I mean, that seems to be crossing the line of what's allowable in the workplace. But in Seminole County, which is the county that I'm in, and one of the Central Florida counties, they actually changed the license application from bride and groom as the two applicants to applicant one and applicant two to neutralize that as far as gender goes. And I saw in a news report just the other day that some counties were saying, we can't change this form. They're going to be bride and groom until the state allows us to change the form. So there's been some disagreement. And, you know, the actual attorneys for the clerks in Florida recommended, before this clarification came down on New Year's Day from the federal judge after the Supreme Court refused to hear this, their attorneys directed them, or recommended to them, advised them not to issue same-sex marriage licenses for, you know, for fear of actual litigation, because they weren't clear on it. But the judge eventually cleared the way, and Pam Bondi kind of quit fighting this. Our attorney general here in the great state of Florida, Pam Bondi, has been fighting marriage equality with every breath. But now it's over, you know. She's lost that battle, and we've all won.
So, as somebody who does a lot of interviews and a lot of stuff like this with Ask an Atheist, I can sort of presage the kind of questions I'm going to get. And I'm expecting to get questions equating this to basically the nativity scenes, where, you know, mm-hmm. we've had these discussions about nativity scenes. You know, we've had the bench thing, and our strategy has been everybody or nobody. And this kind of seems like an extension of everybody or nobody. Where do you think this falls down?
Well, yeah, no, and I've kind of put that in my head in the category of secular or equal. You know, that doesn't come off the tongue too well, but that's kind of how I see these issues. It's, you've got to either be secular, or you've got to allow equal access. And, you know, I coined a phrase a few weeks ago with an interview I did with the Friendly Atheist for the blog there, Lucian's Law. Anytime, when all else fails, call the Satanists and they'll get the job done. And we have not heard from them on this issue, but we've heard from them on seemingly every other issue in Florida. And, you know, I got to tell you, Satanism is looking more and more appealing as a way to advocate for state church separation.
Yeah, I've said that a few times, and I usually get funny looks, but it seems to get it. Boy, does it seem to get the job done. However, that doesn't mean you guys haven't been doing stuff. What has the Central Florida Freethought community been up to regarding this?
Well, in this particular issue, we have not been, as I said, a direct advocate. You know, this is certainly an extremely important state church separation issue, and other organizations have worked extremely hard to make this happen. You know, couples in Florida, as in you know, darn near every other state, I presume, have been taking this issue to court and getting it done because either state laws have prohibited it, constitutional amendments have banned it, and the courts are pretty much in agreement on this, and it's nice to see that, you know, we're getting closer to that liberty and justice for all, which we'd like to be. I guess the main thing that we've been involved in here is just promoting these other organizations, you know, through social media, making sure that people understand what's going on with these issues. And we do have some people in our community. Obviously, we cross paths a great deal with the LGBT rights issues because these are, as I've heard on your show several times, there's no secular argument against marriage equality. And if there's no secular argument, then there's no argument because religious arguments don't matter to the people that aren't religious.
So, David, you are a secular celebrant, a humanist celebrant, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that means that's that right. You can, in Florida, officiate weddings, right?
I can, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that this week?
Yeah, so we were fortunate to have an opportunity to exercise the right to perform these ceremonies. I sought my endorsement last year to make sure that, depending on how the Greece v. Galloway case came down, we would have the right with secular clergy to be able to offer an invocation. We didn't need that because they pretty much said anyone can do it, with some exceptions that are still being addressed, and we could talk a little bit more about that, especially in Florida. But so I was very fortunate to be able to take this endorsement from the Humanist Society, which is an adjunct organization of the American Humanist Association, and put it to use in a way that I had not intended. It's not something that I've had the goal to do, which is to set up a sideline or a full-time business of performing these ceremonies. I've been asked by other people for who can do it. Now I'm able to do it, and I may add that to the many things that I don't have enough time to do, but we'll probably do if someone asks me. And I know Robert Ray up there is involved in that as well, and that's great for him. And I know he's serving a tremendously underserved part of the population, you know, with one-fifth of Americans being non-religious by one means or another, and one-third under 30 being non-religious. To tell people that they've pretty much got to go to church to get married is obscene.
I think that many of our listeners would agree with that. So, David, in your busy week of things you don't have time to do, you did manage to squeak in some weddings there. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, it was a pretty quiet day in our area. We are next to Orange County, which is, where the city of Orlando is. And there was, you know, protests and rallies for, you know, same-sex marriage. And the night before, down in Kissimmee, which is the county directly south of Orange County, Osceola County, they gave away 30 marriage licenses at midnight to people that had registered in advance, which was the one county in the state that did that. And I was just amazed that we didn't have more clerks step up and do something as cool as that. But the mayor down in Orlando did the weddings, and it was very quiet up in Seminole where I was. And we had, I think, 20, maybe 21 same-sex licenses issued in Seminole, according to the journalists here that day. We did three weddings on the courthouse lawn, and it was absolutely amazing. It was so touching. I thought about it, you know, very rationally. I'm going to go down there and I'm going to help these people. And then when the time came, it was so heartwarming and so enjoyable to be a part of this. You know, all the fanfare, all the lawyering and all the media work that everybody has done, when it comes right down to that moment when you're standing in front of that couple and giving them an opportunity that they had, you know, two of the three couples had no intention of this ever being legal in their lifetime until just recently, to be a part of that. I mean, I choke up now just thinking about that moment when we were doing that. And it was hard not to choke up when that happened, and it was tearful for everybody there. We took some pictures and we sent them those pictures, and they were so grateful to have us help them with this. And it was a lot better than the sterile environment of the counter at the clerk's office when it comes to those, you know, doing your vows inside the courthouse.
Oh yeah, I've definitely heard that going to the courthouse is almost like going to the DMV to get married. It's sterile of an atmosphere.
Right.
So did you get any indication from the couples of what kind of weddings they wanted? Did they have any fun requests or interesting stuff with that?
Well, you know, I gotta give credit to someone that we met at the American Humanist Association conference, a secular celebrant in New Mexico, Mary Lee Harrison, inspired us all there with her talk about when marriage equality went to New Mexico. We put together a brief ceremony. You know, the scripted part was about 30 seconds, and then it goes by obviously very, very quickly in some respects, but we allowed them to pick some vows. We allowed them to pick a ring exchange. All three couples brought rings, so we personalized it in that way and made it special. You know, my wife and our friends from the organization, Central Florida Free Thought Community, and the other organizations here were there to be the audience, and we had a photos and everything. So, I mean, it was amazing, and it was customized to a certain extent. It was brief. We thought it was going to be a busy day, or we probably would have written some longer vows or longer ceremony.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, our wedding was what, 2 minutes long and had a dirty joke in the middle of it?
I think it was.
Somebody in the crowd. So
yes, it was, Sam.
I'm a fan of the short ceremony, I can tell you that much. But anyway, 2014 was a big year for you guys with the book exchange and you know, just stuff that was going on in politics. What do you guys have lined up for 2015?
Well, we're almost done closing the forum for the Bible distribution in Orange County, again, from a little help from the Satanic Temple, so we should have that wrapped up the next month. It seems our perpetual long-term goal has always been to get more officially organized, incorporated, become a 501c3, but, you know, some weeks we get 3-4 complaints about state church violations or equal rights issues in Central Florida, so I mean, we can honestly set up a full-time office with an attorney here. So we rely heavily on the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We work with the American Humanist Association and Americans United as well, and even Anti-Defamation League in Brevard. You know, we're definitely not finished with Brevard County, where we were basically told back in August that because we didn't believe in God, we couldn't possibly do an invocation. And the Anti-Defamation League, you know, kind of tried to chime in and help there, and they got shot down in the same 5-0 fashion. 2 new members on that board. But right now, actually, we're asking for Brevard residents who have attended the county commission meetings to be in touch with us. That's all I can say about that right now, but stay tuned, you know, to our Facebook and Twitter pages, and we'll be in touch if we've got news to announce on that front. That's just one issue, and invocations aren't over. We're going to continue to push on those and be, you know, pushing the windows of what those things are and kind of getting involved in not just advocating for our rights, but also trying to close down these forums where basically Christian prayers are being pronounced, you know, 51 weeks out of the year. And then the token atheist gets to go in there and not do that. We would really like these invocations to stop. So that's kind of our long-term goal. We also have school board letters. We want to send to every school board in the state a letter of our top 10 list of complaints and let them know that, you know, how they address these things, what kind of expectations that we have and what kind of expectations the courts have laid out for that. We would love to solicit the legislature for an opportunity to do an invocation there. I think we may find a socially liberal enough legislature in the House or the Senate in Florida to let us do that. Maybe it's a long shot, but they can't say yes if we don't ask, right?
Right. That's kind of how it's working out here in Washington State. I was actually, I think Robert Ray is actually going to be at the state legislature this year, and it just started started with an idle conversation. It's like, hey, have we actually talked to Olympia yet? And he's like, no, I don't think we have. And then he was right on it. So I love that sort of thing. So if we're lucky enough to have somebody in Brevard County listening right now, and anybody else who wants to catch up with you guys, where would I send them?
We have the most active place is Facebook right now. I know it seems so last decade, but we're still working hard on Facebook, and it goes really well for us. We've started up Twitter this past year. In fact, one of our volunteers who was involved in the activism in Brevard is helping with our Twitter page. And so we can be reached at facebook.com/CFL Freethought or on Twitter at CFL Freethought. And CFLFreethought.org is our website, and we've got a contact us page there, and we put our press releases on the front page. So that's the best way to be in touch.
Fantastic. David Williamson is the founder of the Central Florida Freethought community. Always great talking to you, and it's really nice to have some good news in light of what's going on this week. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. We're glad to make news, and it's always better when it's good.
Yeah, well, here's hoping we're on the air in your neck of the woods soon, and we'll talk again.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Have a good afternoon.
All right, before we wrap up the show, we got a few announcements to do. Seattle Atheists will host their annual Darwin Day celebration on Saturday, February 14 at 1 p.m. at Seattle's 2100 building. Camp Quest Northwest will have activities for kids 5 and up. And speaking of Camp Quest Northwest, both staff and camper applications for the June and August sessions of the camp are now open at campquestnorthwest.org. Camp Quest Northwest, for the first time, is moving to 2 sessions, 1 in June, 1 in August, to accommodate more campers. CampQuestNorthwest.org. It's well worth it. I'd also like to thank Rich from Kent, UK, and Rick from Elma, Washington, for meeting Peggy's challenge this week, but I'm going to keep it short. And we're reaching the end of the show. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Dave Brulette and Rebecca Friedman. We did the writing. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. We'll see you guys next week, hopefully with more good news.
Kirby DeLauder.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, I don't need to do a I don't need to do an intro because I can just do a cold intro right out of the
Are you gonna chop silence a little bit? Or are you gonna leave the pregnant pauses in there?
I'm not
I think the pauses are serving this episode well.
I think the editorial pauses might be necessary, but yeah, I was just reaching to what to say because when I get the case of the feels like this, I can really. This is the point where I'm going to reach for the word, say the wrong thing, and completely accidentally tear my argument apart. Like, I'm going to somehow backhandedly support racism or something. It's like, no, I have to be really careful.
You're going to blame the Greek Orthodox Church
for
Russia?
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, those pauses are me going, I really need to get this right.
I think the pregnant pauses can still be in there if you chop silence just a little bit.
Yeah, there's ways I can do that, but the way I did the timing on this is I shouldn't need to.
Okay.
Or I should only need to do it minimally. So
that time when you're like, I thought you guys were gonna talk, you're like, I was hoping you guys were gonna talk more.
No, that was me recognizing that I had just been
pontificating.
Yeah, literally.
Well, I mean, sometimes
I
you
had
do
a big pointy hat on.
You have a hopefully not white. You have a point that you want to make. You have an editorial comment.
Oh, I just got that. Oh, that. Oh.
You're the Peak Sisters, Sam.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, clan jokes.
What did
Turner Main?
Yeah, okay, we were Googling Turner Main.
Okay,
for the...
why were we Googling Turner Main? Because Bigfoot was apparently Bigfoot. Recorded there.
Yeah.
But then I was where the hell is Turner Main?
And the image on Google, when you look it up, were a bunch of people wearing big pointy white hats.
In robes.
But they weren't robes, and we're like,
they were dresses.
Wow, I can't imagine this town likes that. But then I click on it, and it turns out it's like some sort of satirical play, and the robes were actually dresses, and they were all women, and they weren't. And I'm like, wow, I'm just in a bad mood this week. I see pointy hats and immediately think Klan. Well, is that really a bad thing?
I think that's a pretty reasonable supposition there.
Yeah.
I felt real bad.
What?
All right, you guys want to do a fourth?
Yeah.
All yeah. Right. So, Sam, you said that this week you would be inside baseball and not talk about the attacks until we're airing.
Yeah, I blew that out of the water, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well,
you touched on everything that you wanted to touch on.
It just all kind of came
did
together.
Thread together. Yep.
Yeah. It just sometimes you got to pull it when you're like, "What? This is what I'm doing now."
Yeah.
I wanted this. I may just air this in Seattle next week.
Mm.
For the five people and four computers listening to this. We're not on the air in Seattle this week, which is why we're still recording at 3.
There are sports that are happening.
Sports ball hurt us.
I think we should
do what?
I think we should air this as next week's show.
All right. Yeah.
Just taking a week off?
No, we need to produce something.
We need to produce something, but maybe we'll do something a little bit more inside baseball. Wait, don't we have something scheduled next week?
It was the three-part.
All right, so let's air this, and we'll air this in Seattle. This will air also in Michigan next week.
Okay.
And then we'll do something inside baseball for that week.
Or just fun. Or all of the emails. Fun side baseball. All the emails and news that we didn't get to talk about today.
Well, let's do a fourth. I really want to do a fourth this week.
Can we talk about Jews against the Arab?
Yes, we can.
Japo.
Or Nambla.
No, you didn't.
It's not going on the air.
I'm in hitting distance, so I held myself back.
Okay.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Yeah. Let's. Let's go into fourth then. Let's pull up the 8-bit theme.
You can air this as podcast?
I'm going to use the little boy's room.
Are you going to air the little boy's room as podcast?
Sam, you leave your lav here. Actually, a lav in the lav. That would be funny.
Did you see that picture of a suitcase with important lab results?
Important lab or lab?
Lab.
Lab results? No, I didn't see the suitcase with the important lab results.
It's a person holding, it's a black lab in a sort of harness that has a handle that you can just carry.
Aww, you're like a little puppy. Puppy.
Suitcase with important lab results.
My mentor teacher, when I was in my first, actually first 3 years of teaching, but she was my mentor my first year. She was the sixth grade life sciences teacher, and our classroom was right next to each other, and she's a complete animal lover and wonderful, wonderful woman, wonderful teacher. And I got her 1 year for either Christmas or something like that. It was a black, there was no paper, and it was black lab on the top, and it said lab notes. Yeah. Oh, she was fantastic. She still is fantastic. But she just is retired, no longer a teacher. Because I'm old now, and so my colleagues are retiring.
Ms. Friedman, are you 40?
No, really not 40, really not helping. Guys, Ms. Friedman's like 24. No, I'm really not 24. No, she's like 40. No, shut up.
So I had a 24-year-old teacher in high school who was incredibly gorgeous. But, you know, it was always kind of a distance. It's like, wow.
I didn't teach you, Dave.
No. Well, here's the thing. I found out that, like, years later, a friend of mine who was a senior and was actually 18 actually hit on her and tried to convince her of, like, yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And any teacher with any ethics would be like, ew, no. No. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
She's now teaching yoga to elementary kids in Oregon because that's where you would teach yoga to elementary kids.
Yep. Yep, there's high schools that have yoga as a PE elective, and it's good.
Yeah.
Yoga's fine.
Yoga is fine.
So long as you avoid the woo part of it.
Like, well, it was funny because there was a very
Christ devout... yoga, on the other hand.
Yes. No, there was a very devout Christian family that tried to sue a school district for offering yoga because they said that it was endorsing Hindu religion.
Jeez.
So.
Right.
Okay, yes. What happened? Let's also close the carpentry, you know, the shop. because that's endorsing Jesus.
Well done.
Well, I was thinking, what would these parents do if they tried to take down the Christmas tree in the school?
Yeah, it's actually been ruled that you can have a tree in schools because it is a secular symbol.
Well, and I also saw another Christian family sued an elementary school because they had this big poster with the five pillars of Islam.
Yeah.
Because they were doing a segment learning about Islam. Like, the five basic concepts that Islam covers is something that's you can teach without actually indoctrinating.
Right.
This is the foundation of this religion.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is possible for some religious things to become, like, de-religionized. Christmas is definitely like if some politician or they say Merry Christmas or is the sign that says it. My problem with it isn't that Christmas is religious, is more that it's not really inclusive and that's kind
of
mean.
Well, I think that a lot of people that will go out of their way to say Merry Christmas are specifically trying to push their Christian religion.
That too. And similarly, Christmas trees, I think, have moved well beyond, where they started from aside, they've moved well beyond their religious connotations at this point. I mean, they have,
right.
You know.
In general, my stance is if you get angry at somebody wishing you a good whatever, you're the problem.
Like, no, if someone is specifically trying to come up to me, Rebecca Friedman,
God, this show
atheist
really
Jew,
is turning into you are part of the problem, isn't it?
It is. No, but look, if someone comes up to me, Rebecca Friedman, atheist Jew, and says, huh, well, Merry Christmas, you can have a good Christmas, right? Like, no, I am not the problem here.
I wouldn't stop laughing. Really? You did that? Oh, I'd love for that to happen. I mean, yeah.
The first time I felt slightly alienated for not being Christian, for being a little Jewish kid, was in my Head Start kindergarten, and my classmate, Daryl.
Head Start kindergarten.
Head Start is for, like, kids in poor rural areas, Sam. I was living in West Virginia, and...
Sometimes I'm just doing it to see if you notice.
Okay. And my classmate, Daryl, said, Rebecca doesn't have Christmas, and she doesn't have Santa, because she's a different religion. And we were five, and I cried.
And then religion.
And actually, it was really cool because that that spurred my mom coming in and actually giving a little presentation to the like six other classmates that we had in that particular kindergarten class of like, this is what it's like in other people's households where they don't have Santa. And it was really cool. And then she did that later in like first and second grade, since I was the only Jewish kid in my first and second grade.
West Virginia, probably your state.
California.
Well, I might. Okay.
There was a big synagogue in Huntington.
Was there?
Yeah. It was a really pretty synagogue, and it had a blue carpet and a stained glass window, and during sermon time on Friday nights, the rabbi would let all the kids come up, and we'd sit on the steps, and he would have story time instead of a sermon.
Cool.
It was cool.
So I might include some of this in the fourth segment, but I'd like to kick it off.
Actual segment.
Yeah.
Fine, professionalism, whatever.
All right, let's talk about Rejigion.
Rejigion. All right, I assume we want to open up with, do you want to open up with the Eruv?
It is
Eruv, not Eruv or Iruv or Eruv. Eruv.
Mm-hmm. Eruv. I think the kid actually said Rebecca is a Rejigion.
Rebecca, well, that may be true. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. And if you're listening to this, that means you're listening to the podcast, because this is the super secret extra special post-show show.
Ooh.
Or as we call it in production meetings, the fourth segment. Because there's some news that we really wanted to cover, and heck, we're not on the air in Seattle this week anyway because of sports ball, so... Let's
How
do some news.
Sports ball.
I don't even know what I would tell you what sport it is. I honestly don't.
Is it a Husky game?
It's
one of the college games. It's preemptive.
Yeah, it's college sports. Yeah. So, it's not really. It's more a statement of personal ignorance than a statement of judgment. A federal appeals court recently ruled that an Eruv in West Hampton Beach, Long Island, can stay up despite making use of government property. Eruvim use strings, cables, poles, and fences to enclose an area which symbolically makes the entire zone indoors so that Orthodox Jews can move freely around it during the Sabbath while carrying personal items. The West Hampton Beach Eruv was challenged on the principle of church-state separation because it was attached to municipal utility poles. The suit, brought by the Jewish people opposed to the Eruv, or Jepo, was rejected on grounds that no reasonable observer who notices the strings on utility poles would draw the conclusion that a state actor is thereby endorsing religion.
I love Eruvim. It's like one of my favorite loopholes.
You told me about it.
Because you know what? There can't be a hole in it, so it's like a non-loophole loophole.
Right.
The whole thing is that it's a continuous loop and there's no holes. It's great. So there's a prohibition of leaving your home while carrying things on the Sabbath. Sabbath, you're not supposed to do any work, and carrying is designated work, so you can't do that outside of your home. It never made any sense to me, because also lighting fire is work, and you're not allowed to do that, and you're not allowed to light fire in your home anyway, so I don't understand the whole home thing, but let's just make our whole neighborhood our whole communal home.
So this was a part of your former religion that I didn't know about until we met, like this sort of God hacking,
yes.
I guess that you would call it. It was completely new to me.
Well, it's the things like Orthodox women will wear wigs because you're not supposed to look appealing and sexy to other men if you yourself are married. So you have to be modest and cover your hair. So women will sometimes clip their hair very short and then wear gloriously like exclusive fancy wigs that have better quality hair than anything else. And it's like, aren't you kind of like, who are you tricking here kind of thing? Like, Now you look sexier than you did before. I don't get it, but it's...
And this is something that I always thought was kind of strange, particularly about Orthodox Judaism, is that most religions actually, you know, if you don't like something, you just ignore it. You just,
right.
You know, nobody really follows Old Testament commandments in Christianity, but for Jews, it's more like, we're going to find a loophole. We're going to find a right way around this. We're going to follow all these rules, but we're not actually going to follow the rules. We're going to buy stoves that turn themselves on and we can set the day before. So we didn't do anything.
I can kind of see why, because, you know, you're an out group wherever you are and you need stuff to keep the culture together. So you keep, you know, you have these fun rules. And I'll be honest with you, when I first heard about them, I thought I was fascinated. I loved it because I like people who do who hack.
Can I tell you one of my favorite ones?
Sure, sure.
So I went to college in Western Massachusetts, and there were five colleges that were connected by a bus system. And as part of your student fees, you got to ride the bus for free. You would just show them your card. You didn't have to exchange any money. So you can't exchange money on the Sabbath. Okay, cool. But the thing is, you also can't ride in cars and vehicles because it has to do with electricity, which goes back to like the proverbial lighting of fires.
Right.
So Here's what the rabbis in that region decided. The bus sticks to a regular schedule. You're not calling upon the bus. The bus is like the Sabbath oven or the Sabbath elevator that stops at every floor. So you can ride it. You just happen to be walking, and you happen to have a bus in front of where you're walking, and you just happen to walk right onto that bus. And as long as you've got that badge around your neck, right, you're not exchanging any money, and you are not responsible for the lighting of fire, so you're not doing any work. The Sabbath bus.
I also like the hire a guy principle.
Oh, yeah. So if you are in your synagogue and you need people to turn off and on the lights, you have to hire what's referred to as the Shabbos goy. And goy outside of the Jewish community and inside of the Jewish community can be used in a way to say someone who's not Jewish, like Gentile. Can also be used in kind of a really derogatory way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh man, why does she have to go and marry a goy? Right? That kind of thing. It's like,
it's, yeah, I think we faced a little bit of that.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes. But so there's all kinds of loopholes. Have someone else light your fires for you and turn on and off your lights and clean your floors.
I'm available.
The thing now I'm curious about, who was the person who decided that electricity applies to lighting fires? Because that person made things really hard for future generations of Jews.
Yeah, I don't know. It happened sometime.
Like, if somebody had just said, no, that's not the same thing. Electricity is fine. Like, it's not a fire.
Well, who knows?
I don't know. But the thing with the Erevim that's just like, really kind of silly is that there's someone that will go around and check that the connection is made before sundown on Friday and be like, yep, okay, you can bring your babies to shul this evening because the household is intact. If that were really...
Well, if you're running a single wire, you could just run a current through it.
You could.
Yeah, that'd be pretty easy.
But only the Shabbos goy could light the current.
No, it's always on.
Yes. So that would be good, actually. You could see whether your LED is lit, then it's connected. If it's not lit, all right.
Like I said, I like hacking. I'm sorry. It occasionally transcends the idea that I find a lot of these things completely ridiculous.
So I actually kind of really embrace this culture of sort of trickery and loophole and hacking, right? Like, I really got thrill out of trying to find a loophole, trying to do a close reading of a law and being like, no, I wasn't actually speeding.
Are we bringing this personal?
I think we're bringing this personal, Sam.
Okay, we're bringing this personal. So, Dave loves this, which is the only reason I'm sharing.
This caused a little bit of friction between us.
It really did, because I try to be very direct or very intentional. Like, when our relationship got serious, because for a while it wasn't, but when our relationship got serious, I wanted to be very intentional about boundaries and where things are going. The standard stuff you talk about relationships. And every time I offered something that I thought we should or shouldn't do, your first thing was to try and find a way around it.
Yeah, like
almost automatically.
Let's put the shoes in this area by the front door, and then, okay, that seems like a good rule.
I didn't think I really cared about that.
I didn't care about that. I'm using an example.
Yeah.
That sounds like a reasonable rule. Okay. But now let's find a loophole for, these aren't really shoes, these are slippers, or these are sandals, Because culturally I just really, really, gravitated towards that kind of practice. It's fun, it's challenging, it provides a little puzzle for you to solve.
No, like I said, I definitely understand the puzzle aspect of it, but it was just like every time I said I need to do this or I need to, it actually sometimes came down to I'm not going to be here for this or I need you to pick these things up. You'd try to find ways around it, and I was boggled. Like, what? Why? Why are you doing this? This is not supposed to limit you. It's supposed to, And it was weird. And then you started. This is kind of how I heard about these things. Was you sort of attributed to that?
I did. Well, it's kind of the same as, okay, how do you get around the commandment to stone a rebellious son? How do you get around the commandment of, not using fire or electricity on Shabbos?
Right. I'm all in favor of hacks where you don't stone people. I'm in favor of that.
That is a good one.
Yeah, that's good. So it led me to say something that...
I think we were in the middle of a fight, weren't we?
Yeah, that I said kind of in haste and unthinkingly... I'm not as stupid as you think your God is.
I don't remember whether I reacted in haste or not, but, you know, 7 years removed from that moment, it's a really, really great line, Sam. I've got to hand it to you.
Yeah, that was one that about 2 hours later, I wanted to erase from my brain, to be honest with you. But yeah, I guess that kind of is a good line. But you know, there's sort of the weird side to this, because I mean, El Al is having to land flights because Orthodox guys won't sit in seats next to women.
Okay. Yes.
Can I talk about this for a second?
The garbage bag.
Okay. The garbage bag?
We'll get to that.
Okay. I've been seeing this article floating around saying it's time to arrest these people for refusing. I feel like that's a little extreme. Like, how about throw them off the plane, they don't get their money back? You know, well, I feel like arresting somebody...
Here's the thing, though. If you're hewing to a law, right, if you're saying, like, let's find a loophole around this, you wouldn't want to alienate your clientele, your constituents, by saying, no, we're actually going to refuse service to you because XYZ. You can remove that, find a loophole around alienating your clientele by saying, actually, I'm sorry, but it's federal aviation laws that really force us to place you under arrest for interfering with the duties of pilots and flight crew.
And I got a follow-up question for that, for both of you. What's the effective difference between this and a hijacking?
I don't see one. They're not obeying, flight regulations and flight...
I mean, other than the lack of guns, but then you know, monkeying a guy with a shoe.
No, it's interfering with being able to take off and land. If you will not be seated, we cannot take off. They're standing in the middle of the aisles. You're preventing a plane from taking off.
Well, and I feel like the difference is hijacking is something that happens in midair to force an airplane to go somewhere it wasn't intended to go.
Like I said, that's why I said effective difference. These planes are not reaching their destinations because, or are being diverted because people won't follow the rules of air, flying in a plane. The ICAO rules.
I feel like the effective difference is somebody purposely going on a plane to divert that plane as opposed to someone who's going on a plane that's like, oh, there's
a
woman next to me.
I have a hard time believing there isn't any intention there. Well, no, so the garbage bag is one guy's solution to that was actually to sort of wrap himself up in plastic and live in a little airlock while he was on the plane.
That's a great hack.
Yeah, okay.
It's great. You can't, you're...
Creepy!
Very creepy. No.
Hey, if you can make that sound dampening, I might buy that for a flight.
Oh, sure, like, yeah. I totally
put yourself in your own burka.
Oh, there's a kid on the plane. Somebody hand me the hefty. Yeah, well, like I said, it's interesting to hear about. But it's just one of those things where, like the old shows that we used to do back when we were a television show, Where's the Harm? Mm-hmm. Where we would talk about something that was seemed relatively harmless and then say, hey, no, this actually causes harm here. This might be one of those things. I like the idea of, you know, hacks to get around problems or the application of creativity, but then you get this weird, you know, plane hijacking.
Why can't they just
plane
charter
hijacking
their own flight?
Because estrogen.
No, really. Why can't they just charter their own flight at that point?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and to get back to this Eruv, when we were talking about this in the projection meeting earlier, the important thing about this
I suppose we should talk about that. Right? Yeah,
there is actually a point to this whole thing.
Yeah,
is that the question is that that went to the federal government is that these Eruvs are being put on public utility poles, so it's technically government land that's being used, and so the question is,
right,
should it be taken down because is that a government endorsement of religion?
Way back before this story got funny, one of my questions again, what is the effective difference? And that is, what is the effective difference of this and a nativity scene? The nativity scenes that we tend to spend 3 months a year complaining about, I'm not sure there is one.
So the ruling said no reasonable observer could look at these and think that A, they are religious, and B, that it represents government endorsement of religion, right?
Yeah.
But someone's ignorance that this is a religious practice really doesn't excuse it. I mean, in terms of if you're in Ravenna, for instance, the neighborhood of Seattle that has a high concentration of Orthodox Jews, or if you are in West Hampton Beach, Long Island, high concentration of Orthodox Jews, you know what those are.
Right.
You know what they are. Sometimes they're flagged and, you know, with little things that say don't cut. Worst idea ever, because you're just inviting every truant 14-year-old to go and snip them. But but really, I mean, people know what they're there for. And if they don't know what they're there for, they certainly do now when you have attention being brought to them of, look at this quaint little funny thing that happens here right. in this neighborhood. Or look at this lawsuit that people brought.
I feel like there is an effective difference between a nativity scene and an Erev, in that a nativity scene is somebody trying to blatantly and loudly put their stamp of religion on government, to say the government believes what I believe and we need to keep everyone
else out. Is that necessarily the case, or can it be the government has to serve the needs of my religion?
I think it's more stamp of ownership.
Okay.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be fighting to stop this. So
and then
much.
that brings up the. You know, I can kind of go with you on that one.
And my point being that the Erev is not a blatant trying to say the government approves of what I do. It's just, hey, there's polls there. Let's use them.
Like I said, I can kind of go with you on that one, with one exception.
Okay.
Case law.
Yes, this is a point that I was getting around. This is where you had me convinced
okay.
when we were talking about this earlier. So, yeah, please expand.
Straightforward is now you have it on the books that for the purposes of support or whatever, you know, religious groups can do things on public property. That's a, you know, it is a slippery.
As long as people are ignorant of it.
As long as people are, well, not, but that's what it says now. But what is legal precedent but a series of very short slippery slopes? So it may not be that far away from Erevs are okay to nativity scenes are okay. And that would concern me. Does it concern me over much? You know what? Yeah, it does.
but and the point that you were making earlier that I think is worth mentioning is that we can approach these communities and say, look, we have a problem with this, not because we have a problem with what you're doing, but we have a problem with what that would open the door for other people to do. So we want to work with you to come up with a solution that works for both of us.
Yeah.
So it's not us coming in and saying, you can't have that.
Right.
We're going to be rah, 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 rah. It's not that. It's more.
Here's a solution that I came up with. And then, Sam, you even took it one further. You're in an urban neighborhood or a suburban neighborhood, presumably with paved streets. If a utility pole and a wire and a clothesline can serve as the borders of an Erev, why can't streets, why can't asphalt be that kind of marker? Like, it's, you know, why don't you just use that? Then you said, why does it even have to be something physical at all?
Right. Why does it have to be something physical? You've already made the hack that this is one house. Why not just take it one step further and say house equals neighborhood? I also suggested that maybe the Orthodox Jews should form a public utility so that they lay cable around the neighborhood. That cable now passes data and serves the community. And then it just happens to also be an Erev.
That would be a great way to form great relationships with your non-Orthodox community members.
Mentos, the fresh maker!
Yes.
Which is actually how I ended a argument on Facebook this week. Is I got a weird Christian guy to actually say something nice after, I don't know, 18 rounds. And then I just posted, Mentos, the fresh maker, and left. Speaking of awkward silences, Natalie from Temecula, California writes, I've noticed that when there's an awkward silence or when the conversation goes off on an odd tangent, you tend to recite the show's phone number as a segue back to the topic at hand. You do it often enough that I wonder if you've ever caught yourself about to say it in normal conversation. Only every day.
It is. I love the none too subtle, guys, you're off track.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, for skeptic.
Yeah. And I actually did it on purpose for a while. Is, you know, we were at a post show or something, and somebody would say something weird, and I go, ask an atheist, 253-584-1480.
That's not our phone number anymore, by the way.
No, but we're on the podcast, so I don't give a crap. yeah, it's, and it became kind of a joke when I was like, really, really uncomfortable with something. I just pretend I was on the air and wanted to change the subject. Yeah, it's weird how much my radio habits sort of become part of my speech. Like, I talk a lot more boisterously than I used to. I used to have a much more flat tone.
I beg to differ.
I don't know.
Funny enough, though, as often as you mention the phone number, few calls.
Few phone calls, yeah.
So, well, really, really, call us.
Right.
Good. Call us
right now. Right now we're pre-recorded. That's slated to change
next week, was it?
Well, not next week, by the end of the month. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of okay with not getting calls, but I like interaction.
Leave a voicemail. Seriously.
Leave a voicemail.
If you want to email us, just call it and leave it because, you know,
that's true.
Your voices are pretty.
We're less likely to edit you if you leave a voicemail.
Yes. Unless you say your last name. We're not going to include your last name.
Right. Yeah. We don't include your last name. That's a thing we do.
Or if you sound like the greatest voicemail that Ask an Atheist has ever gotten. That's not going to get on.
Don't swear on a voicemail. We won't play you on air.
Darwin was wrong. Yeah. We should do the fire guy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Atlanta Fire Rescue Department Chief Kevin Cochran was fired after a controversy surrounding his self-published book. Cochran identifies himself as fire chief in his book, which describes homosexuality as morally equivalent to pederasty and bestiality. The book was distributed to an unknown number of department employees. Cochran's supporters claim he's being fired for his religious beliefs, but Mayor Kasem Reed insists that the chief was terminated for problems of management skills and personal judgment. Being very intentional about the pronunciation there, because I wasn't in the pre-show and made a terrible, terrible mistake.
Wonderful, wonderful mistake.
So here's the thing. He was being fired for problems of management skills. He had bad personal judgment in publishing his book. I got kind of scared because it's like, all right, he published a book for his men's Bible study and all of a sudden he's being fired.
Right.
This is a guy who has a storied career. He's worked in multiple cities. He's worked for the federal, you know, the Obama administration on fire control and suppression and stuff like that.
At the time, all we knew is that he wrote this book and that he was a fire chief. There was no interaction between work and book, and we were like, well, if there's no interaction between work and book, why is he being fired?
Yeah, and we talked a lot about sort of the conservative reactions. He's being fired for being a Christian.
Yeah, and it's like that was actually going to be our thing.
It kind of looks like, it's like, you know, if I don't see anything to tell me otherwise, you guys actually have a point for once.
Right,
but
well, again, but the thing is, because if this guy can get fired for that, that scared you.
It did scare me.
You're a teacher.
I am a public employee. I'm a teacher. And, you know, if I didn't say things in the classroom, but I said things on the air that would be considered offensive to people, would my job be at risk, just like the fire chief's job was at risk? Does that represent a lack of personal judgment?
But then again, you get to your, but.
We found out, he was distributing the book at work.
Yeah.
Which, okay, you're done.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Done. Thanks.
And you look at it, it's like, you know, it's not that you're not allowed to have these opinions. You can have whatever opinions you want. But
you can have whatever demented, stupid, moronic, worthless opinions you like.
You are allowed to be wrong.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you publish this book and start handing out to people at work, and you have somebody who works for you who's gay, do they think they have any security anymore? Do they think they have the ability to go to you with a problem anymore? You are a fire chief. You're an administrator. Your job is to work with people, and now you're making it so some people don't feel comfortable working with you. Yes, you deserve to be fired.
Easy peasy.
I don't know. Usually with guys like these, given the tenor of religious debate in 2015,
There's something else there.
Something's going to happen. Yeah. So I'm certain they're keeping a close eye on him. But as long as he does what I do when I'm working and just shut up about religion and stay professional, I don't think he'd have a problem. Now, that said, I did kind of worry that if he's got gay people in the fire department, they might worry about the kind of support they would get from that kind of chief. And we're talking about potential life or death situations, which was my only concern. But if he stays professional, shouldn't be a problem.
Shouldn't be, yeah.
So, weird one. Very weird one. Anyway, anything else you guys want to do, or should we wrap it up?
I think it's about time to wrap it up.
I'm good with wrapping up.
Okay.
Unless you want to cover this last email saved.
Oh, no, we should do that on the air.
Okay.
Yeah. we'll just leave that one hanging for you guys. Wow, 12, we got a lot of people all of a sudden. You missed the good parts. Let's do this one real quick, and then we'll tune out. Olivia from the interwebs writes, "What are your sources of authority and truth?"
I go to Sam for all of my authority and truth because I submit to my husband.
I am always correct, robot, alpha, beta, 4-7, berserk. I go to Ferrara Pan because I'm addicted to lemon heads. Please help me.
You finally caught us. We just accept everything that Charles Dawkins says without any... Charles Dawkins? Richard Dawkins.
Charles.
Is that like the love child of Charles Darwin and Richard Dawkins?
It's like a... It's a weird science Voltron. Yes, it's yes, right.
Yeah. Whatever Charles Dawkins says, we accept.
Richard Darwin, too.
Richard Darwin as well.
Screw that guy. We all listened to Richard Dawkins. I have his face tattooed in a very private place. When I originally made that joke, I said scrotum, but this might go on the air. So
we are trying to put together a sort of scripture of Hitchens.
Yeah, well, yeah. I actually had about 10 minutes of material I decided not to release last month talking about why I think everybody wants to be Hitchens and what I want to be like from Hitchens. Because I think I not really a debater, but there was something about him that, anyway, I don't know why I'm going off on about this because we're at the end of the show.
No authority. We just are complete anarchists.
Well, yeah, we're complete anarchists. We believe in nothing.
They're
we love nothing.
Man.
We're going to burn the world. No, I mean, the science for things about the physical world. Like I said, a rational approach to ethics. Yeah. Most people don't like being murdered, so maybe don't murder people.
Humanistic utilitarianism?
Yeah, something like that. I think, you know, honestly, sometimes I think people put too much thought into it. Like, sometimes it is actually kind of simple.
Yep. Hey, Amanda Metzkus of Camp Quest, Inc. Says that the most powerful thing that one of her high school teachers had in the classroom was a bumper sticker that said, question authority. I will say that it was on a previous car that I owned as well.
Yeah.
So when you're talking to people that value a bumper sticker that says question authority, asking the question, where do you get your authority and truth from? It's a little tricky.
Yeah.
And me being a jerk wanted a bumper sticker that says questioning authority. It's like I wanted a bumper sticker that says start seeing cars.
I did hear about a teacher who wore two buttons on his coat at the same time. One said question authority. The other said, trust me, I'm a teacher.
I want those both.
That's good. Okay, one final question for those of you listening, and this might even go on the podcast. We're starting to act. There's a new logo we're launching. If you're watching this on or listening to this on your iPhone or iPad, you can look at your device now and see the new awesome logo. Would you rather that on a beer glass or a tea mug?
Tea mug.
Yeah, that's why I didn't ask Becky.
Beer.
Or myself.
You can drink beer out of a mug.
You can drink tea
out of
a beer
glass.
Mug.
Yeah. And with that thought, that's all the time we've got for today. This is a fourth segment. You're going to be hearing a lot of these, or you might be hearing more of these as they go on. I like doing these, especially after I get such a heavy episode like this week. Thank you, guys. For those of you still listening in the Tacoma area, we'll see you guys at the tap room in an hour. I don't have to say see you next week. I said that shit already.